any of you watched last night's mumbling session, I'm sure that you felt the same way that I did, which was creeped out. It was eerie. This is the new normal the Democrats have been telling us is coming, so I guess we probably shouldn't act like we're surprised. Today is the 100th day, by the way. Big day of celebration today, the magical day that we all heard about during the campaign, before the installation of the puppet that we knew would be controlled by the globalists, which is happening now, and these globalists now starting to show their face. And we saw last night what the new normal is, an empty room. I mean, did you see that? It was essentially vacant. Think about that. A presidential address before the joint session of Congress. And for the first time in American history, the room was basically empty. It was a ghost town. It's weird. Who can't admit that? And anybody who uses their platform today, any pundit, any commentator, any journalist, any anchor, any mainstream media whack job that gives that speech some sort of kudos or credit to unity and positivity and a message of, nope, that is abuse of your platform. You are lying to yourself and you are lying to anyone who tunes in. And I'm sure that many of you today tuned in anticipating a breakdown of the joint session address from last evening, and I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do it because if you tuned in, then you saw it. You know what it is. It is what it is. And if you didn't tune in, you didn't tune in. You avoided it for a reason. But I can and I will sum it up for you. America is a systemically racist country. Black people are oppressed by rich white men. Pedophilia doesn't exist, and I'm not going to mention it. I was fairly elected. I was sent to Washington, where I was inaugurated behind razor wire, guarded by tens of thousands of National Guard troops. Our country terribly and completely mishandled the China flu, which was intentionally released with strategic planning and prior knowledge by the primary investor in an obscure Wuhan lab called Anthony Fauci. But pay no attention to that. Because Donald Trump is orange, and Donald Trump is bad. And he's the reason why everybody believes that my son did something wrong by collecting millions of dollars around the world in adversarial countries, adversary, by the way, to the United States, to right here, to America, as he compromised your national security, our national security, the national security of America, sold the influence of the sitting vice president of the United States right down the river. And anyone who doesn't support, by the way, my trillions of dollars in spending is a conspiracy theorist and a racist. And it doesn't matter how I'm going to pay for any of it. Don't you dare ask me. It doesn't matter how you're going to, because you know the answer is your pocketbook. But don't voice your opinion. Don't voice your opinion. Just put this mask on, line up for that injection. Sit down over there somewhere, you little taxpayer, and shut up. I'm busy working here. Also, by the way, as a side note, plan for more riots in your city all summer long as my DOJ investigates and destroys law and order in your city. We will defund your police departments. We will criminalize and jail the officers that are there to protect you should they use force in any situation affecting a lawful arrest, even in the most justifiable situations. We will hunt down anyone that supported my political opponent. We will federally prosecute them. We will remand them into custody. Also, do not question why I omitted the crisis at the border that I, by the way, intentionally created with the help of radical puppeteers that control me, which is the fundamental reason that I'm here. Accept the amnesty for millions of criminal illegals that will forever vote radical liberal, and don't question it. Because if you do, you're a racist. They installed me because I can be controlled. And your predictions about an early termination of my presidency are inevitable. But talking about it may end you up in custody. Just the same as if you question my unconstitutional executive actions, signed, by the way, in record-shattering time, one accomplishment that we can be proud of. Don't you question the destruction of the First Amendment, the targeting of the Second, or the stolen election? Don't mind the fact that I'm about to pack the Supreme Court, create statehood for progressive strongholds, topple the entire political system of our once free republic, or that I'm getting ready to federalize elections to be certain that the globalists that reign over me remain in power eternally. The power that controls the masses using the fear emotion, the fear of the threat of being maybe taken from your kids, the loss of your liberty as you're targeted by the corrupt judiciary that protects the criminals that are overtly assaulting the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The very same people that protect the elites involved with trafficking innocent children, participating in pedophilia. These will be the so-called judges that rule over your destiny with the unchecked authority to take political prisoners and literally kidnap you, jail you, and force medicate you. Folks, this is not hyperbole or shock value television programming for clicks and likes and followers. This is what's happening in America right before your eyes. Right here in the United States of America, once free people are being targeted, retaliated against, silenced, jailed, and drugged at the hands of judicial tyrants. Elizabeth Weinstein is a 49-year-old mother, a graduate of Columbia University, the survivor of severe domestic violence and narcissistic abuse, and a respected resident of Briarcliff Manor, New York. Her husband is a high-profile and powerful attorney with big-time connections in the judiciary. Her husband also has a lifelong history with pedophilia, and I'm going to get to why that's important. When Elizabeth confirmed her husband's existing practice and confronted her husband, telling him that if he wanted it to stop and agreed not to hurt them anymore, they would help him. Her husband initially agreed, and then he ran. The judicial system and law enforcement were then weaponized against Elizabeth. She was kidnapped. She lost contact with her children. She has been made homeless. She has been arrested multiple times. She has been sent to prison without due process. She filed a federal lawsuit for the false arrests and imprisonments. She was then kidnapped again by the same police who were defendants in her case, brought in front of the same judge who deemed her to be, quote, incompetent, brought back to jail, involuntarily committed against her will, ordered to ingest what she calls a lethal cocktail of prescription medication by another related judge. Elizabeth Harding Weinstein joins us now. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here.
Stu, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for so blatantly speaking the truth. You know, we're taught to like tiptoe around things, and it's important just to go right to the truth.
Well, you're alleging some pretty serious retaliation here, kidnapping, being forced medication by judicial order. This is incredibly serious, and it's happening in real life. This isn't a movie. Correct. This is going on in your world. Take us through it.
Yeah, thank you so much. And again, my one thing that I say to everybody is I don't want you to believe a single word I'm saying. I want everybody to look at the evidence for themselves. This is happening right now in America, 2021. Our government is not looking for clear and convincing evidence of crimes to arrest you. They're looking for plausible deniability, why they can get away with it. It's sick what's been happening to me. It's sick what's been happening to my children. This all started in May of 2020. When I found out about my husband's pedophilia and we confronted him, as you just mentioned, he went missing for weeks. While he was missing for weeks, he got a judicial order. Now, he was under a pedophilia investigation. The children were in my sole care. They were confirmed safe. And I say confirmed because I don't want to say that these people have the responsibility to say whether or not they're safe. They were affirmed, though, by Department of Social Services and the police to be safe in my care. Another judge outside of our district then gave an order for Brian, including the children who were in my care against me, to say that I had to be evicted from my home. I had to stay away from my children. That was on June 5th. There's a video of the eviction that's and of them reading this order to me. It's a full vacate and stay away order. My children at the time were 17, almost 16. She was a month away, and 13. They told the police. My father left after we talked about his pedophilia. He's been missing. We don't want to go with him. This is scary. We want to stay with our mom. And Briarcliff Manor Police Sergeant Bassett and Officer Raphael blatantly lied lied to me and lied to my children and said, if you go with your mother, she's going to be arrested for kidnapping. So you have to go with your pedophile father. Just lied. And I, to this day, I blame myself for not knowing the law. And that's why I want my story to get out so people educate themselves and you know that this is happening and you know your rights and you can find a way to defend yourself before it happens to you.
So you went to a government building and you were not wearing a mask, right?
You weren't wearing a mask.
You were in the process of filing a court document and an FOIA form showing the corruption of these judges that have now weaponized the system against you.
Correct.
This guy was, he had a problem with the fact, probably because of what was in the documents, contained in the documents. But he placed the blame on the maskless face. He called the police, who then responded upstairs inside of their own government building, and then they arrested you.
Yes, correct. So I had been homeless. I'm a multimillionaire, but I'm homeless, evicted from my home, had no access to my children. My funding was frozen by my husband. I always joke that I'm the only homeless person that lived out of a Porsche Cayenne. So after 6 months of this and having these judicial orders against me where I've never been allowed access to the court to be heard, but I'm falsely arrested for violating orders that have never been proven to be lawful, I go to the court, to the court clerk to file documents. There's a phone call from the clerk even before she saw me saying, who let her in here? We don't want her in here. Can you guys come up and take care of her? They came up, they claimed because I had no mask, I was disorderly. They make false statements. And I don't want you to believe me. Just watch, the evidence speaks for itself. Watch the video. And then they arrested me. They didn't arraign me. They denied me access to an attorney, and they put me in solitary confinement.
They chained you to a wall, didn't they?
They pinned me against the wall, and then they chained me to a wall down in the police office for hours, 4 or 5 hours. Now, what's interesting about this is the judge came in to arraign me. So the judge showed up to arraign me. And then they were conspiring with the judge back and forth. They would go in. I could hear them play the video of my arrest and then come out. And then they make changes on their documents. And then they go back in. They originally said they were arresting me for disorderly conduct. Then they changed that to obstruction of government administration, too, because that has a longer jail time. But the point of the matter is I was denied an attorney. I was denied due process. They gave me no arraignment. And they instead just put me in prison and the Westchester County Correctional Facility in Valhalla.
How long were you locked up in the prison for?
Well, he remanded me there for 7 weeks. 7 weeks was what he remanded me there for. I was able to get out 5 days later, and that was a whole nother story of corruption about how I get out and what happened. But after I was released, I then filed a federal lawsuit against them for the false imprisonment. And that's in the Southern District of New York, which is a very, very influential court district in our entire country.
Yeah, the Southern District of New York is the very court that should be trying Hillary Rodham Clinton right now for treason and crimes against our country. But they're refusing to do that. So after you get out of custody, after this 5 days goes on, then what happens?
So, sorry, you went blank for a little bit. I had a little interference with a related phone.
After you get out of jail, after you get out of jail, after these 5 days, then what happens?
So on March 8th, I filed this federal lawsuit against the judge and the town and the village. And I can put that up online, but people can also look it up if you go on something called casetext.com. The case number is 7-21-CV-01996-CS. So you can get a copy of the claim that I filed. That was filed on March 8th. In addition to that, I filed what was called a motion for emergency injunctive relief, asking to be heard for emergency access to be heard, saying that I had probable cause to suggest that this judge was going to act in retaliation and was coming after me for my advocacy on these points. The court didn't file my emergency motion to be relieved. They filed my first motion, but they withheld filing my emergency motion to be heard until the 11th. Then on March 9th, I got an email from the town saying, hey, Mrs. Weinstein, why don't you come in at this time and we'll talk about getting you your documents. And so I, of course, as a reasonable person, thought, see, like now that they're going to be held accountable, these people are going to act lawful. So, but I knew enough to report it. So I show up and there's a video of me saying, yay, here I am. I'm feeling good. But the last time I felt good, they falsely imprisoned me, but let's just see what happens. I go up to the village hall. The village door is locked. You can see a gentleman on the other side telling me to wait. One of the defendants, who is Detective Fred Galbraith, who is the detective that's in charge of the pedophilia case that I showed tampered with evidence and stalled the case and refused to take witness testimony. He comes to the door and he opens the door for me. I go to walk up the stairs to go to get my documents and meet with the court clerk, and they jump me from behind. I have the whole video of it. That's why I say it's not that I was arrested. I was kidnapped. They have no warrant. They've never produced a warrant. They've never given me any evidence for a rationale that they had right to take me into custody. And yet it was Detective Galbraith and then also Chief, who I call DUI Buetti, because the chief of our police has a DUI. He's a criminal. And yet we make him a chief in our town. So they then take me into custody. They again chain me to a wall. I'm again denied access to a lawyer. A friend of mine is able to, you know, because people now know it's gotten so egregious. This is, I think at that point, it was my fifth false arrest by these same police who were defendants in my case. So people now know if I'm going into town and they don't hear from me, they come to the village with cameras ready. So I have a friend of mine, the police wouldn't let her in to be a witness, but she recorded through a crack in the door, recorded me being chained to the wall and giving testimony what was going on. I was then literally forced by Sergeant Salov and another officer whose name I'm forgetting at the very moment into a courtroom. And it was on a Tuesday, and that's important because we don't have court on Tuesday. We only hold court on Wednesday. And yet they're ready and waiting. Was the judge, was the DA, David Lauscher, who was also a defendant in my case, and the judge is Judge Howard T. Code, and the court clerk, who was also defended in my case, Rory Zerman, were all there waiting. And basically, the judge says, we're declaring you incompetent. And I say, Judge Code, this is ridiculous. You can't just declare me incompetent. And, you know, there should be a trial. You've not given me notice of a trial. And he said, we emailed you last week. And I was like, an email is not proper notice. And I filed something with you on record to say that there was no proper notice and that your email was improper. And when you were asking me to come, I was not available. And I asked for a reasonable notice and proper time. You've not provided me any of this. Doesn't matter. You're incompetent. We're sending you to jail. And I say, Judge Code, that's ridiculous. If somebody's incompetent, they don't go to jail. That's why people claim being incompetent. And by the way, a 730 exam, which is whether or not you're competent to stand trial, and all that's required, the bar is so low. All that's required, do you know your name, the person, the place, that's alert and oriented to person, place, and time? Do you know the charges against you? Do you know the people that are in the courtroom? Do you know the time that you would be subjected to if you were found guilty? I knew all of this. So a 730 exam is different from somebody who is either suicidal or homicidal and needs to be taken into custody to protect themselves or to protect others. You understand?
Yeah.
So the idea that they're now saying they're going to send me to jail because he's deeming me incompetent to stand trial is just, it's so egregious. It's just so blatantly corrupt on its face. But yet they didn't give me a lawyer. Then they tell my friend, wait out front and you can talk to her out front when we bring you out front. They instead chain me and they bring me downstairs through a separate secret entrance and they radio to the police car to come around. She then hears it. She comes running around the corner and there's a video recording of me saying, being kept by the police saying, I'm of sound mind and body. I'm not a threat to myself or others. I'm fully competent. And yet they're sending me to jail. And the police affirm that. Yep, we're taking her to jail. They push me. And I say, they won't let me talk to a lawyer. They push my head into a car and off I go. I get locked, I get brought to a jail, strip searched again, okay? I mean, the whole thing, bend over, spread your cheeks, it's awful and humiliating, okay? And also egregious if you're really holding somebody there for being incompetent, you wouldn't subject them to that type of, do you understand? It's It's just absurd. It's absolutely absurd. My friend gets in touch with me by, I get locked into a holding cell where I can call collect out. She answers my phone. She says, don't worry, a lawyer is coming down right now to get you out. I say, thank God. But the calls are being recorded. Within minutes, like 90 seconds of her saying that, they storm into my cell. They say, get up, we're transferring you now.
Okay, and where do they take you at this point?
They transfer me to St. Vincent's Medical Center, which is a psychiatric hospital in Harrison, New York. Now, I am a Columbia University trained nurse. I did my psychiatric training at Bellevue Hospital and my ER training. So I understand how this works. I want to make it clear, they don't just bring me there. They shackle me. They shackle my ankles. They have chains wrapped around my waist and chains wrapped around my hand. They bring me there. I show up ready and waiting is a litany of doctors. And I say to all of them, I know my rights. I'd like the director of the medical center here. I would like the patient care director here. And I want my lawyer here. I'm a victim of severe judicial and narcissistic abuse. And I'm being retaliated for filing a federal lawsuit against these defendants who are now bringing me here. But just to be clear, the defendants that I was in the custody of were the police officers from the jail, not from the village anymore. So they weren't named directly in my suit, these officers that brought me there. And there was a guy by the name of Dr. Afobi. There was a Dr. Weinstein who said she was one of the medical directors there. There was a nurse practitioner who was there, who was Muhammad Taib. And there was Dr. Afobi. And Dr. Afobi said, you listen to me. You're not going anywhere. You're coming in here and you're doing what I tell you. And if you don't do what I tell you, we're sending you back to jail and you're going to stay there for 5 days. And then we're going to transfer you to a state-run mental hospital. And I'm like, you sound ridiculous. Why am I going to jail if I have no criminal charges against me? You guys are ridiculous. But the cops unchain me. They lock me in a room. I'm allowed to try and get in touch with people. Dr. Afobi asks to interview me and he says, listen, Mrs. Weinstein, if you're fine, then you should have no problem proving to us that you're fine. And we should be able to just get this done. But you're going to be up here for a few days to prove to us that you're fine.
And don't you have don't you have a letter that you've provided to the Stu Peters Show here from a psychologist who actually deemed that you are not a threat to yourself or a threat to anybody else?
Yes, but I want to be very clear about that, because that is a slippery slope. To say that I need anybody, yes, it's true that I have that. But you as citizens don't have to go around proving your competency. They have to prove that you are a harm to yourself or others. The burden of proof is on them. If us as American citizens have to prove our competency to engage in any way, we couldn't buy gas. Do you understand? Because if we're deemed incompetent first until we prove our competency, then we're not allowed to enter into contracts, and any purchase is a legal contract. So therefore, yes, I have the documented evidence, but that is what they're going for. They want us to get into a mindset where they can take control of us by saying, without evidence, without cause, that we're a threat to ourselves or others simply because we are advocates and we speak out.
Okay, so I want to stop you right there for a second, because you hit on a specific topic that we can dive into a little bit of a rabbit hole here. I've got about 5 minutes left, so I want to make sure that we get to this. You talked about adopting a specific mentality. A mentality of just going ahead and being subservient,
correct.
You know, allowing yourself to be trampled upon, worshiping your kidnapper, right? This is called
exactly.
Stockholm syndrome. And I have talked to my listeners about Stockholm syndrome before. This happens oftentimes with victims of pedophilia, victims of people who were molested when they were kids. They fall in love with, they worship, they revere, they follow their abuser, and they will do what they say out of fear and out of this misconception of what they perceive to be love.
Yes.
You're talking about a husband of yours who is now a graduate of some Ivy League schools. He's a high-powered, high-profile attorney. He's connected to very connected people, obviously, within the judiciary, as well as other multimillionaires such as yourself and others. And so he's able to use his influence. But as part of this adopted mentality of him being subservient to his abuser, right? Yes. He has become a person who is easily able to adopt a control. For example, masking requirements, mandates, lockdowns. He became a big proponent of these big government lockdowns, and he was trying to force them upon you. And then he used that system and weaponized that system that he has become very familiar with through the political and judiciary process against you. And that's what this, the real nuts and bolts of this story is, that this is a huge cover-up that is actually happening not only to you, but this is happening. Yes. The scariest part of this whole story is that your story is not synonymous. It's not unique. Correct. That's the word.
Yeah. Yeah. I since coming out and talking about my story, I have gotten phone calls from people, California, Florida, New York, Canada, Sweden, Europe. We're coming together. The story would get out and people would be so surprised about how egregious it was. We take immediate action. What happened instead is I started getting so many phone calls from people saying, yeah, this happened to me. And I'm like, what do you mean? So this is what we need to take home as the American people. The government is kidnapping people using very, very, very little plausible deniability for doing so. And they're taking control of us. If you stand out in any way, if you speak out, they're trying to find a way that they can kidnap you. And they're using three ways of doing it. They're using our police, they're using our hospitals, and they're using our mental hygiene laws, okay? This is a military state right now, and they're trying to do it slowly and quietly, and they're trying to silence the people that it's happening to. But if we don't stand up and connect the dots, it's going to start getting too late. I know we win this war, but it's just a matter of how much pain we all have to go through before we stand up and take back our rights, defend our freedoms.
Elizabeth Harding Weinstein, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. And please follow my story on Instagram, Lizzie Harding One, or Facebook, Elizabeth Harding One, Elizabeth Harding Weinstein, for all the evidence.
We'll put it in the,
thank you so much.
We'll put it in the story at redvoicemedia.com as well as at stupeters.tv.
Thank you, Stu.
Well, although it was painful, it was eerie, it was cringeworthy, it was dark, depressing, scary, somewhat amusing at times to watch the mumblings of the installed fake phony charade show of a president, how he gave an address to an empty chamber last evening, most of you most likely made the decision to tune out. But it's important that I pay attention so that you can get a truthful account while we paint the picture of reality and translate all of those lies into the effect that this radical regime will have on your everyday life. Well, just as I pay attention on your behalf, Deanna Lorraine also sacrifices her sanity for the cause. She joins us now to try to make some sense out of the evil and hostile takeover being disguised as love and humanity from the soapbox of communism. What did you make of all of this last night?
Well, first of all, yes, it's very painful. You're welcome to have to sit through this painful circus for an hour and a half to watch this so I can give you guys all the highlights and you don't have to watch it. It was, number one, going along with that same theme, that dystopian, dark, this is our new future, this is our new normal COVID theme. As you can tell right away, everyone's wearing masks. Everyone's been supposedly vaccinated, though, but they're all wearing masks. They're all super social distance. And really, there wasn't very many people at all in there. And it was just such a change from last year at President Trump's State of the Union address, if you remember. I mean, it was booming. There was so much enthusiasm, so many people. COVID wasn't a thing then. And it's kind of a sad thing to see just how far we've dove, you know, since then. We plummeted in our country since then.
It is.
So that was number one.
And I was just going to say, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was going to say, you referred to Donald Trump's State of the Union address. The room was, it was thick with emotion. You could cut the emotion in the room anywhere that President Donald J. Trump went or still goes. You can feel the emotion. I mean, 50, 60, 80, 100,000 people would go if the arena would sustain that kind of a crowd. And if these unconstitutional limitations weren't there, it would be limitless the amount of people that would go to these things. And whether you love him or if you hate him, there was emotion attached to it. Last night, completely vacant of any emotion whatsoever. It was really weird. Just like, it's so weird what Washington is. I mean, think about that. A joint session is empty. I just, And this is the new normal. We see the empty chamber. We see the empty streets of Washington, D.C. We see the seemingly empty White House every night, the dark, weird White House as this show, right. This Hollywood set is being pushed upon us as if it's the new Washington, D.C. It's insane.
Right. The lights are out, both in the White House and with Joe Biden and his presidency and administration. Like, knock, knock. Who's there? Nobody. Nobody's there. It's this vacant feeling. And of course, this speech, this joint session speech, came later than most years, too, because Joe Biden has such a busy schedule. He can't keep up with anything. He's so lethargic. He's so old and senile that he cannot have too much on his plate.
He had to get up from his nap and wipe the soup off of his tie that he spilled on himself. Get
exactly.
The cookie crumbs out of his hair.
I feel so bad for the caretaker who has to feed him Jell-O every day. But everyone's falling asleep in this, including Chuck Schumer. There's a picture that I sent you, too, of Chuck Schumer literally falling asleep, slouching in his chair. People are sliding in their chairs. Even his own people are falling asleep. Now, that's the energy and the environment of it. Now, with the context of it, he went, of course, full on with the vaccines. And he gave this very sob story about how now grandmothers don't have to stand with their faces pressed against the glass windows to see their grandchildren because they can get vaccines.
Yeah, you don't have to put your hand up on the glass anymore. Yeah. Now you can guess. Now you can give a. And a lot of these stories that he tells, when he was doing it on the campaign trail in front of the 38 people that were paid to be there along with the press corps, when he was doing it then, I got an email from this woman. You don't even know how to open your email, Biden, number one. Number two, these are all phony. They're all fake stories. I want sources. I want to know who it is that told you this story, this gut-wrenching, heartfelt story. Nobody did. Right. These are speechwriters from the propaganda machine of the communist wing that sits at the faction table, the round table with these elitist globalists that want to topple our entire political system. That's the people who's writing these things. They're fake. They're made up. They're phony. It's all lies. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. I will eat crow. I swear to God, I will lovingly wrap my own knickknacks in bubble paper and gladly leave the country if you really show me the authentic person that told you this story. It's a lie. It's a lie.
Right.
I know it.
Things that never happened for 500, Alex.
And
then
yes.
And then he goes on and tells a story about a mother who, she just sat in her car and cried.
Another lie. Yep, another lie. In line for the vaccine. Yes, I heard this one too.
Because she knows that the bus drivers and the teachers and the students, they're all going to be vaccinated. And she can have her child be sent to normal. She can return to normal activities again. It's all lies. Then she, one more story, which is kind of ridiculous, is the nurse. She said that there's a nurse that told him that every time I give a vaccine, it's like giving a dose of hope.
Yes, I heard that.
A dose of hope. You mean a dose of death? More like it, a dose of death. I don't imagine anyone actually told him this story.
Here's a dose of infertility. Here's a dose of weird menstruation. Here's a dose of blood clots. And here's a dose of, hey, healthy guy, go lay down and die somewhere.
Yeah. Here's a dose of having a third arm and a third eye coming out.
Some antennas coming out of your forehead.
Right. It's sad. And now I'll get back to the vaccines in a second. But then we hear him talk about build back better. And it was a very funny phrase. Hopefully you play the clip. But he says very solemnly, we have to do more than build back better. We need to build back better.
Win the 21st century. We're at a great inflection point in history. We have to do more than just build back better. We have to build back better.
Oh, okay, great. You just repeated the same thing. And then, of course, he goes into the racist garbage, saying that the biggest threat to our democracy, it's not China, it's not anything else. The biggest threat to our country is white supremacy.
Yes.
That's our biggest threat, right?
Yeah.
There we go on to this thing and how he's going to punish it. He's going to penalize anyone associated with white supremacy and that whole issue. And then, of course, he got slammed for saying that the protest on January 6th at the Capitol was the biggest attack to our democracy since the Civil War.
Yes.
Since the Civil War. Forget 9/11. Forget the Oklahoma bombing or Pearl Harbor or anything else that's ever happened. Jim Crow. That was the biggest attack to our democracy.
The deadly insurrection led by Trump cop killers. Cop killers. Remember? Brian Sicknick, who his death is tragic. Absolutely. So, absolutely, it's tragic. But he did not die at the hands of Trump supporters wielding fire extinguishers. A total lie, once again, which we played that yesterday on our show here.
Right, exactly. And you know, too, that it's this is the big push. This is the big push. And, you know, of course, he doesn't say anything about all the burnings, the buildings burned from BLM over the summer, or the riots, the businesses destroyed. None of that. All of that gets swept under the rug. It's so disgusting and one-sided.
Swept under the rug, just like the arrest of Rudy Giuliani, another false flag meant to distract you away from Hunter Biden's laptop and all these other things. You know, I mean, Rudy Giuliani being criminalized for investigating the criminal that's standing before an empty chamber giving a weird speech as an imposter. It's absolutely bass-ackwards. And to think that these people actually are narcissistic enough, Deanna, to believe that we are ingesting this and going, oh, wow.
I know. Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, we are racist. I missed this. For 40 years, I'm 41 now, but for 40 years of my life, I've been in the dark about how racist I am. And everybody around me so racist. How could I think that anything like the COVID virus, which we were told, I don't know, a year ago, this was the most deadly thing ever to happen. How could I think that the attacks on 9/11 was so tragic when the insurrection was so tragic and racism is going to kill us all? It's the biggest threat ever. I bet John Kerry, the traitor, was rolling over. No, it's global warming. That's what's the most dangerous.
Yeah, I know. And then he wants us to just sit around and just flog each other and just and go ahead and just like grovel on the throne of the BLM and say, oh my God, I'm so racist. I'm so disgusting. I'm such a horrible person. What can I do? And then he goes in to say that about the anti-Asian American hate crime bill, right? Which is another false flag. I mean, this is just another attempt. There is no hate crimes towards Asians. There are no sudden rise of hatred towards Asian. It's a manufactured crisis once again. And really it's for the purpose of not being able to criticize what's coming down the pipe.
It's another Jussie Smollett.
Right, exactly. It's another Jussie Smollett. It's a way to also gain the sympathy of Asians into the Black Lives Matter bucket. And for us to, he knows that China is taking over. He knows China's taking over the world, taking over America. He knows that. And any criticism towards China or Chinese or Asians at this point forward, he wants to be able to shut down and have reason to do so. So I think that is just something to look out for. All this these fake anti-American, Asian-American hate crimes, that's all wrapped into there. Now, Tim Scott gave a really good rebuttal last night. I'm not sure if you saw that, but his was good. It was lambasting Biden and calling him out for the lies.
Those are always a little bit weird and hard for me to watch because, you know, there's no crowd there, although there wasn't in the chamber either.
It is weird.
But there's
yeah,
just nobody there. You're talking to the camera. All these rebuttals, even when it was Trump giving a great speech and then it was I always feel bad for the guy that gets propped up there in front of the camera. Okay, now respond to all of this. I feel bad for that guy. It's weird.
It feels kind of like tit for tat, like, okay, just allow him to have that speech and marinate in that speech. It does feel a little tit for tat. But I thought Tim Scott did a good job. I thought he was the right person for that time because he's a Black American. He's very successful, came from poverty in a hard time. And, you know, he was great for him to say that America is not a racist country and you could make America into what you want it to be.
I feel a butt coming here. I feel a butt coming. Where's the butt?
I don't think that there's a but. I think that he did a great job. The but really was, and Kamala Harris even joined him this morning saying, you're right, America is not a racist country, and we need to still talk about racism, though, however. The but was this morning when I heard President Trump goes ahead and slams Biden for his speech last night, saying that he took credit for the vaccine rush and the vaccine rollout, and President Trump goes off and saying, it's my vaccine. I'm the one who should get the credit for it. And it makes me cringe every time Trump says that, because he should not be taking credit for this unproven, untested vaccine that's creating infertility, deaths, and so many other things. And it's almost like they give him a little bit of a bait, and Trump takes the bait every time.
Yeah.
And I do think he's going to lose his base if he keeps on just pushing these vaccines.
He's a counterpuncher. That's what he does. That's his nature. Yeah. That's how he's made all the money. But see, the problem is that in the days of the counterpunch, when Trump was extremely effective, he was making decisions based on information that he gathered. He is now being so protected as a president and then a former president now. He's being so protected by these gatekeepers who are withholding information that's important. important for him to know. The most fatal mistake for Trump, I've said it many times and I'll say it again right now, the most fatal mistake are the people that are around him. The Jared Kushners of the world need to go back to their uber ultra liberal lifestyles filled with cocktail parties, $1,000 champagne toasts, and hors d'oeuvre platters. They miss that. And they want to go back to a pre-Trump era. So they are, the people closest to him are sabotaging any chance at a future run. Now, I do have a but to the Tim Scott rebuttal. So although I think that his message was on point last night, and although I agree with him that no, we are not a racist country, and although I agree with him that this is the greatest republic that the planet has ever seen, I agree with his America First sentiment, I agree with everything that he said. What I don't agree with, and my biggest question to him would be, where were you? Where were you when this fraudulent and stolen election was being certified? Right. Where are you, along with the rest of these establishment rhinos in our government? Where are you now when we have an audit going on in Arizona where you can void this thing? This whole thing can be redone. Why are we forgetting that America is still dealing with real PTSD? We are really going through an actual major psyop here, a completely stolen election. I mean, where are you then? I don't want to hear anything that you're saying really holds no weight for me, because you're empty. These are just words that you're saying. And yes, the words resonate because I believe the things that you're saying, but I actually believe them. And I actually act accordingly with all that I can do, whether it's at redvoicemedia.com, whether it's at stupeters.tv or behind this microphone with you every day, Deanna, wherever it is, I'm actually doing what I know how to do.
Yeah.
But people like Scott and the rest of these people here, they have the ability, they have the authority to do something a lot more than I do, because they are elected representatives. They are in our government right now. They have constitutional and Senate authority granted to them by we the people to stop this where it stands right now and actually grab a hold of their balls, find their testicular fortitude, and do something. So all these words, although be it awkward, and I feel bad that he had to stand there and he was propped up as the guy to give the rebuttal, and I've articulated all that, great. And although the words are something that I agree with, and yes, America should be first, and I agree with all of that, we're not racist, all those things, I agree. But I don't believe you, because you have run away from me as an American. You have run away from 300 million of my brothers and sisters who genuinely care about this country. And whether they're Republican or Democrat, they had an election stolen from them. And even if they were the biggest Biden supporters in the world, they're still pissed off because they know that he's not there under legitimate pretense. Nobody wants that. And so that's my butt for Tim Scott from last night.
I have to agree with you, Stu. And that's the thing with every one of these representatives, actually. Every time they look into a camera or post a tweet, I see reports of them taking down someone, like, you know, oh, he slammed Fauci for this and this, and Tim Scott slammed Biden for this and this. And then they have this little viral video clip that they get all this attention for, and they get a little ego boost.
Right.
But this is short-lived, and it's almost like it erases their sin before of not truly standing up for the Republic when it really mattered and when we really, really needed them. Where were they before? Exactly what you said. They were too soft. They didn't have the balls. They cowered and they caved.
And they're still being soft. Like you said, well, you know what? You're right. I'm just going to forgive you for dropping your penis and replacing it with a purse. Let me just forgive you for all of that. You know, and no offense to Pressler or anything.
Right, because you have a sassy viral video all of a sudden. Oh, cool. Josh Hawley is the man now. Oh, cool. Tim Scott is the man now. He's awesome. But so many people are that gullible and stupid and naive, and they fall for it. And then you're right. They do just erase their past crimes and sins of not having the balls to stand up where it really, really mattered.
He's not going to get a pass. He's not going to get a pass, not here.
They're not. And we can't have this memory of enough. I'm tired of people having this short-term memory where we keep forgetting their crimes and their sins and the fact that they took no action when it really mattered. It's actions, not words, not cute tweets, not cute viral videos. It's actions that matter.
Now, how about recognizing that there's real pedophilia happening out here? How about recognizing that there is actually a crisis at the border, that this is a humanitarian crisis? You know, how about actually doing something to investigate the criminals? But criminals won't investigate criminals. Isn't that a weird thing?
It's a very weird thing because those who scream the loudest have the most to deflect on, right? They want to deflect. And I think so many of these people are corrupt and they are just so willing to bend when they just get the least bit of pressure or threats. And we have to be done with them. Seriously, conservatives have to turn a new leaf this year or we're going to keep getting the same old rhinos and non-action, no balls representatives that we've got before. And guess what? We're going to deserve it. We will have deserved it. We need to stand together and say, I'm tired of the tweets, the viral videos, the words, the empty promises. We need actions. We need results. We need testicular fortitude or we're not going to support you. No matter if you have an R next to your name, if you claim to be a patriot, it doesn't matter. It's actions, not words. Shots fired.
Yeah. And some good ones at that. All very good points. And not only are they just ignoring and laying down, but they're actually participating.
Yes.
Knowing what's happening to our republic, watching the Constitution and the Bill of Rights get torn to shreds, watching people lose their right to speak freely, watching the Second Amendment come under attack, watching actual Americans like this woman be jailed repeatedly over and over again, watching people lose custody of their children. You want to know how the Holocaust happened? You want to believe how it really happened? Look around. Look around. Remember, they loved Hitler before he killed them. Officers are being subjected to unsolicited attacks, targeted, assassinated, just for showing up at work, just for wearing a uniform. We saw the guy, the thug, the heathen, smacking a New York City detective over the head with a stick just the other day. We brought that to you here on the Stu Peters Show. And for answering the call to service that lives in their hearts. Folks, this is in their soul. People don't just wake up one day and decide, I think I'm going to go be a cop. This is in the actual physical fabric of their beings from the time that they're little children. They're the last line of defense between anarchy and safety. I've articulated so many times that these are the heroes that run directly toward danger, directly toward gunfire. Active shooters, they selflessly risk their own safety and their lives to preserve the lives of others. Regardless of their color, regardless of a victim's religious belief or political alignment, it doesn't matter who they voted for or how they identify sexually. And we should be taking care of them. We should be demanding that the families of law enforcement are also protected, that they're honored, and that they're properly taken care of should an officer, their loved one, lose their life in the line of duty. This is the will of most Americans. Most Americans are very good people, specifically all of you that join me every afternoon. But seemingly, this is not the will of our government, specifically in Alameda County. These families are being forgotten, left behind, intentionally neglected. It's tragic, and it needs to stop. Marine Anna Rocha lost her husband, Oscar Rocha, who was a veteran at the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. It's been since July that Oscar passed, and not a single charity that purports to assist widows of those that lost their lives in the line of duty has reached out or even responded when Marine has inquired. But what's even more shocking and what's even more unjust is that the county has refused to release Oscar's pension, the retirement that he worked for. Excuse me, to take care of his family. Should something happen to him, is now being held hostage and Maureen left holding the bag. She joins us now. First of all, sorry for the loss of your husband. We want you to know that we honor his service. We appreciate your sacrifice as well because you've made a tremendous sacrifice because of his heroic sacrifice. We appreciate that.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me this morning. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Has the county communicated with you at all about this pension or are they just completely ignoring the situation altogether?
So, needless to say, the press release went out and they got a hold of it and they have started to move on being more aggressive towards helping me. The problem with my situation is the county who handles my husband's pension, they have to determine if he died in the line of duty. They had to do an exhaustive investigation through the state of California. Even though the federal government, the state of California, and the county of Alameda, and the sheriff, and the sheriff's department all said my husband died in the line of duty, pension board still has to do their investigation. My case will be heard on May 20th. I had to hire an attorney to fight for my husband's pension, which is highly unusual. That puts a lot on a widow to have to pay out money to hire attorneys to get a pension. So they would be willing to pay the pension of non-service, meaning he didn't die in the line of duty. What they're fighting me on is in the line of duty. And that is what's happening to widows across this country. I am here in Texas.
Why are they fighting it? I mean, what is the fight? What is the holdup? How can they be saying that he didn't die in the line of duty?
Money.
Yeah.
Money. It comes down to money. Do they want to now set a precedence that they have to pay every line of duty death out for COVID? It's all about the COVID and the money. You know what really is upsetting me too is, excuse me, billions of dollars went to the states from the federal government since last March for COVID. Billions of dollars. Why can't some of that money go to the families of COVID victims? Our husbands died. They went to work. They got sick. They died of COVID. Charities are supposed to come to help you.
Yeah, and specifically, your husband died of COVID because he was subjected to masses of people, crowds of people in the wake of the riots because of the death of career criminal, home invading George Floyd, correct?
Exactly. My husband was in the jail, Santa Rita Jail in Dublin, California, a large county jail, and their arrests, their bookings went up 500%. And they were arresting people from all over the country. And that's where my husband got sick.
Meanwhile, while you're fighting for your pension, the family of the aforementioned career criminal, home invading, violent thug who resisted arrest for 10 minutes, who ingested a lethal amount of fentanyl and meth, according to the medical examiner, according to the coroner's report, according to the medical professionals that said that his heart exploded due to ingesting three times the lethal amount of illegal, illicit street drugs. Meanwhile, his family gets $27 million from the city of Minneapolis prior to any conviction, by the way, of Derek Chauvin, before any due process. Exactly. So, and $27 million, that's the low number. There's speculation that this family could be receiving up to $100 million. Yet your husband's funeral was a restricted funeral because of the pandemic. You're not able to go there. He's not able to have a large gathering of people. Meanwhile, George Floyd has multiple funerals in multiple different cities, gold plated caskets, thousands of people gathering, people from all over, celebrities and stuff speaking. And meanwhile, you're left with this restricted funeral and having to come out of your pocket to pay for these expenses.
Exactly. And that's why I would plead with anyone who would know how to get this federal money down to these police agencies that can help these families. We have been struggling. All of us have agreed. We lost our husbands in 2020. None of us have had time to grieve because all we've had to do is fight to get what is ours and to survive. Here in Texas, Governor Abbott will sign SB 22 in early June, and that will then release funds for the widows here in Texas. There's 100 widows who lost their husbands in 2020 to COVID, police officers. They've received nothing, no medical benefits, no workman's comp money, no pension. They've received nothing. Thankfully, Governor Abbott will sign that bill. I met with legislators last week at the Capitol. It looks like that's going to be a go. 16 other states like Texas that don't have a presumptive order in their house to take care of these widows.
Now, you've reached out to charities, and these charities have not gotten back to you. They need to. If you are a police charity here that contributes to families where husbands or wives, spouses, fathers, mothers, children die in the line of duty protecting the safety of their communities, you need to step up right now. I mean, this is an in the line of duty death. This would have never happened had there not been a 500% increased in amount of people being jailed as a result of these riots. This would have never happened. We could speculate that he would still be here. He died in the line of duty serving his community. And if you are a charity that supports and purports that this is what you do, then you need to step up and do it. But nobody has reached out to you. Nobody has responded to your inquiries. And now the county, the government, because of money, because of the evil and the corruption that is, it's all money motivated. You're not getting anything.
Yep. I'm not. And neither are the widows in Texas. And there's 16 other states. I don't have those states right now. But if you're out there listening and you know someone who is in our situation, me and the 100 widows in Texas, please contact me on my Facebook page, Maureen Enner. And I look to start a Facebook page for Widows of COVID. I will be at Washington, D.C. at the National Police Officers Week in October. They moved it to October. I will be there. I will be speaking live to families who lost their loved ones of COVID. And if it comes to where I have to start my own nonprofit and a charity, I will. And we will designate that money to families of COVID. There are widows here in Texas who had to pay out of their own pocket to transport their husbands from the funeral, from the hospital to the county where their funeral was going to be held. And that is just not heard of.
Hold on a minute. Somebody had to pay for the transport of the body of their loved one who they lost in the line of duty?
Yes. Yes. The widow had to pay. The county did not, in this particular county in Texas, that county did not step in to help. Those are things that are just not heard of when you lose an officer in the line of duty. It's not heard of. Those agencies and those charities are there to come and help you. They knock on your door. They ask you what you need. They give you a check. In my situation, they paid my husband's plot. But all funerals are paid anyways from charities when you lose a police officer. My husband had a beautiful funeral. I'm grateful for all of the donations toward that. I'm not trying to put anybody in a bad spot for what I was given as far as a funeral. They treated me very well.
Yeah, you're not minimizing the efforts of those that have come forward and been generous in their contributions. No, I mean, we get that. But when you're comparing the burial of your husband, a hero, to the burial or the remembrance or the say their name, you know, of the very people who he's protecting my children against, this is so bass ackwards. This is so upside down. And this is happening right here in America. I mean, it's absolutely insane to try to wrap your head around all of, I'm floored. I'm speechless while I sit here and listen to all of this.
And you're exactly right. Like, as a widow, we didn't know what to do. None of us have lost a husband in the line of duty before. We're not career police wives. You know, we don't know what to expect. And when we started hearing different stories, and because you're very, first of all, you're the grief is horrible. The shock is horrible. Everything you go through when your husband dies is horrible. And you can't think straight and you don't know what to do. And you just take advice from people. It's a horrible time. And those are the times when the charities do need to step in, when you're in that state of shock and you don't know what to do. I mean, you can't even brush your teeth some days. I mean, it's just horrible what happens. And nobody steps forward. And we don't know if these large charities, if they have it in their bylaws that, you know, maybe they only have a certain way of dying. Of course, COVID is new to them too, to these charities. Everybody's afraid that COVID's going to deplete everybody's pockets in counties and states and charities.
Well, it has.
The state of Texas, the argument in Texas, when the Democrats came and argued this, they said they didn't want another entitlement. How can you call helping widows an entitlement? When I heard that at the state capitol last week, I almost threw up it was horrible to hear that. Horrible. Horrible.
Maureen, a lot of good is going to come from this. And you, you alluded to the fact that you might be founding your own charity. And you know what? That's a calling. You know, that's something that should happen. And if you have it within you after you heal from this, which will be never, obviously, but as you gain your strength and you're able to wrap your head around and get some of this nonsense out of your way that these bureaucrats are holding up, if that's a calling for you, then you should go for it. Because as you alluded to, you're not the only person that's dealing with this. There are many, many families. There are many widows that are in your same position. How do they reach out to you? On your Facebook page, Maureen Enner, that's E-N-N-O-R, correct?
Yes. And I will be starting a page for Widows of COVID.
Also, we have a lot of very good people that listen to this program. A lot of very generous people that flood these crowdfunding accounts for people who are dealing with all kinds of different situations in this weird upside down way of life that we're experiencing in our country right now. If they want to help you while this pension is being stalled, while these charities are ignoring your needs, how can somebody help you?
Go to my Facebook page. There is a memorial account set up in my husband's name in California. After my husband died, I moved to Texas. We were going to retire. My husband was 3 months from retiring, by the way, when he died. So I'm in Texas, and they can go to my Facebook page. I'll give them the memorial account information, and I will be helping these widows in Texas with any donations that come through your show, because they literally have nothing.
Well, we're going to put the link at redvoicemedia.com as well. It will also be at stupeters.tv. There'll be a link directly to Maureen's Facebook page, so you don't have to try to remember it. If you're in the car listening, you don't have to try to scramble or pull over or write it down. It will be at redvoicemedia.com as well as stupeters.tv, and you can help Maureen, who has pledged that any donations that come from this show, she's going to help these other widows as well, and we really appreciate that. You see, this is what America is supposed to do. We are a community that is supposed to take care of one another. Regardless of how somebody dies or how they politically align or what color they are, your husband is a hero, and he deserves to be honored. We honor him, and we honor your sacrifice as well. Thank you so much for being here, Maureen Inner.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed today's show. Make sure to join us tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern for another episode of The Stu Peters Show. Until then, here's what's up to it. Here's what's down to it. Here's to any way that you can get to it. Here's to those that don't do it. May they be dragged to it, tied to it, or forced to it. And here's to us who do it, because we're the ones that's used to it. Remember to fly low and avoid that radar. And listen, one day they're going to come for the car. And when they do, save the radio!